A pause to refresh now. Open it up. Let it breathe. Catch the ambiance there. What a powerful nose. Classic. Hints of chlorine, phosphates, linear alkabenzene sulfonate. Ooh, sodium fatty acids, diquaternium ethoxy sulfate. One of a kind. No wonder people can't get enough of this stuff.
The cleanest queen under the sun is Tide Clean. New Tide Clean.
That's right, Tide detergent from Procter & Gamble, a chemical soup or powder that made doing laundry a breeze. Breeze, that's another detergent, but nothing comes close to the brand power of Tide.
As you can see, Tide saved the outfit. Sincerely, Lisa K. Matheson.
If it's gotta be clean, it's gotta be Tide.
Procter & Gamble, the largest consumer products company in the world, and Tide is a $1.7 billion business chunk all by itself.
Since we switched to Tide, we use much less.
Their clothes are looking much more, what's the word?
Clean?
Employable.
That's my Tide. What's yours?
Ever since my husband got his job working outdoors and sometimes getting exposed to poisonous plants, like poison ivy, we always use Tide laundry soap.
People love Tide. Peggy there on the phone is one of our listeners. Having a relationship with a laundry detergent has had some exceptional consequences for Procter & Gamble. Coveted Tide has an aftermarket, a black market in shoplifted Tide, $15,000 worth each month, and that's just a small piece of the Tide envy, Tide addiction, Tide loyalty, explored in an article in New York Magazine called Suds for Drugs. James Burnett is a news editor of New York Magazine and joins us. James, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Since when is Tide news?
Well, this goes back about 2 years, and it's been happening nationwide, but one of the epicenters of the crime wave, if you will, is in Prince George County, Maryland. And when they first announced their bust, they started getting calls in nationwide. And then last year, for the first time, detergent, but specifically Tide, showed up on the what's called the National Retail Federation's list of most stolen objects. So this is, you know, it's a relatively new development. Certainly.
And we reached out to Procter & Gamble, as I suspect you did. They didn't respond to our request for a comment or an interview on this subject. But how did Tide get this way? Why are people so loyal? What did they tell your reporters?
Well, this is a story, first of, you know, Tide does work. I mean, they were the first in the market to develop these surfactants that let the dirt come off the clothes and not resettle somewhere else. So they're first into the market. And then as they're position becomes more dominant, they plow a lot back into research and development. So in the intro there, we heard about the scent and the bouquet of it. They spend a lot of money making sure that that scent comes out throughout the wash cycle, where another one might show up later on or only at certain points. There's a consistency to it. And they just reinforce and reinforce it. So that allows them to charge about 50% more than the next leading competitor. Yet really run away with the market. That creates a bigger margin when you get into the black market, more room to play with.
So there's a price point issue. They can charge more because it does work, and there's clearly a consumer impression that using Tide is different from using, you know, Acme soap or Brand X,
right?
I guess. But there's also anecdotal evidence and real polling evidence that people who lose their jobs, the last thing they part with is their Tide. It's something of a symbol of domestic tranquility or having your act together.
Yeah, I think that having your act together, you are in control. It's not just that your clothes are clean, but that you are somehow a good person, and it's been tied up with all these sort of domestic virtues. That's a really powerful thing for P&G.
And if you had a case of Tide, you could actually take it to a neighborhood, you know, sort of pull up with a pickup truck, pull the tarp off and go, can we unload this and leave with cash?
It would depend on the bodega you were pulling up to. But what we found in our reporting is that, yes, one thing is that the profit margin for the retailer on Tide is not huge. They might make $2, say, on a $20 bottle. But if you're getting a stolen bottle for $5 or $10, obviously you as the retailer pocket more of that. And so that's what's created this aftermarket.
New York Magazine, and we're talking with James Burnett, the news editor of New York Magazine. New York Magazine has done a lot of stories about this kind of thing. For instance, Timberland boots becoming a hip fashion item, or Tommy Hilfiger discovering that, in fact, Hilfiger clothes were a huge sort of hip-hop fashion statement. How do companies deal with a brand that has been sort of driven away from perhaps their expectation lane?
It ends up being a dicey situation to be in. I think in P&G's case with Tide, when we did contact them, it was funny. They said, if this is happening, they didn't even want to acknowledge it. We certainly don't condone it. But then they flipped it back to say this speaks to the broad brand appeal, they have a huge customer base. And in a way, they don't complain too much about that.
But can you imagine a public service announcement of, we at Tide love clean clothes, but think shoplifting is bad.
Right. I mean, they can't do that.
They can't. They won't do that.
Or they also,
did you find out that they wouldn't do that?
Is not a particular line of inquiry that we made. But but what I will say is the thing that's interesting about this is detergent is an everyday product, right? Or it's something that everybody needs, whether they use Tide or not. If you have a Timberland boots or if you have a fashion item, they may have a particular consumer in mind. They may have a particular market segment, a particular positioning that can be subverted more when it ends up reaching a different audience. In the case of Tide, I mean, it's more consumers overall. They don't want their normal legit supply chain disrupted, obviously. But
and you haven't found people wearing that distinctive orange coloring in their shirts or jackets or something.
Nothing like that.
Nothing like that. You know, P&G, Procter & Gamble, has gotten into brand weirdness before. They used to have this symbol with the moon and a kind of a man in the moon character from the 1850s that a rumor developed that it had to do with Satanism, and they had to come out of their corporate cave a little bit to actually quash this rumor and eventually change the trademark. So this isn't a first for P&G.
It does give you, I guess one imagines what these jobs are like if you're sort of the brand guardian for a big American or multinational, consumer products company, and you think maybe this is going to be a ho-hum job. All I have to do is get the message out, and then you find that your logo is being associated with Satanism or that your product is being targeted by shoplifters when it's detergent at the end of the day. I guess these things are a little bit more exciting than we might think.
What did you discover about the communities you investigated when you looked at this aftermarket for Tide?
Well, what ends up happening a lot of times is that there will be the big drugstore chain that's on the border between a lower income area and a higher income one and sort of serves the consumer base of both, but primarily the lower income one where it's the sort of close, it's foot traffic or it's on a bus line or it's something like that. And so it ends up being a kind of scarcity situation mm-hmm. where that's what a lot of the opportunity comes from.
And I'm looking at your laundry. You've got a cardigan on, a tie. Do you use Tide yourself?
I do use Tide. And it made me question the times that I had. I mean, seriously, this article made me question the times that I had gone for the discount
brand. Interesting. James Burnett is news editor of New York Magazine. He edited Ben Painter's piece in last week's issue all about Tide's aftermarket called Suds for Drugs. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.